Pile Football Podcast live from the Combine. We got a sick setup here, guys, don't we? This is Will Brinson, Jason Lockenford, CBS Sports joining us, and Joel Corey, a correspondent for CBSSports.com, former agent. We've enjoyed having you around today, or last night and today, man.
I've enjoyed being here. Yes, thanks for having me.
It's been fun.
Ain't no party like a Will Brinson party, huh?
No doubt.
Your girl, Miss Russell, came over and said that I was she's from Washington, you know.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Just making sure I knew what you're talking about.
But she came over and said I was acting like a scared little boy in the corner last night. I was like, what are you talking about?
I don't even remember.
We were at the JW bar.
It must have been after I left because I don't remember seeing you there. I was there for a little while.
You were?
Yeah.
At the which
one? I went
one?
Over there with her. The Velocity or whatever.
No. She came over to the other side. We were on the other side.
Yeah. I was there at the Velocity for a little while.
We were hanging out screaming about sports and stuff, which is what we were doing actually on this set until we realized that we should have been recording it. So the thing that we were talking about, I think this is an interesting hypothetical, and it doesn't really have anything to do with the Combine except because you were talking draft. But we were talking about what if, you know, in this what if hypothetical world, Cam Newton had ended up on – Cam Newton – The Panthers, Andrew Luck had come out his junior year,
right,
and the Panthers ended up with him. It's kind of fascinating to think about because the Colts wouldn't be in the position they would be in. And I was saying I almost advocated.
Maybe Peyton's still in Indy.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe so. And I even advocated, you know, I wouldn't like banging the table or anything for it, but I was saying, you know, the Panthers should consider drafting A.J. Green or Patrick Peterson, pass on Cam Newton, and then when Andrew Luck comes out the next year, because he had to, right?
It's hard to know. I mean, so much can happen in a year.
Sure.
You know, you can't.
You could stumble into
four
wins. You
can't do it that way.
Yeah.
And if you pass on Cam Newton to hope you get Andrew Luck and you get neither of them, you're definitely getting fired.
Yeah, you're getting fired. You are getting fired.
So, you know, you've got to mitigate some of the potential ramifications of coming out of it with still. I mean, who the hell were their quarterbacks at the time? It was Clawson and Matt Moore?
Yeah, it was Clawson and Matt Moore. And Jimmy Clawson had just completed what was arguably the least impressive rookie season.
Well, you stand a good chance of being a cellar dweller with those two guys.
Yeah. I mean, Matt Moore's the ultimate placeholder. Really nice guy. And Jimmy Clawson, I'm sure he's a great dude, too. But I can't ever get over the picture where he's dangling the rings. But I think this does dovetail nicely because everybody acts like taking Cam Newton 1 was a slam dunk lock job decision. It was not at all.
Do you remember that combine with Cam Newton and people were slandering him? I mean, the articles that were coming out, anonymous quotes.
He's
the OG. There was like a full on hate campaign against Cam Newton.
There still
in
is.
Various segments of the media. And it was in various corridors of the NFL community.
The radio callers in North Carolina still to this day, like they did it after the Tampa Bay game, the first game. They call up, they're like, we need to talk about having Derek Anderson come in this game and be our full-time starter and giving him the money. Don't give Cam the money. And it's like, dude.
You mean the guy who washed out of Cleveland? Okay.
Yeah, exactly. It's insane. But so I think it's interesting because Cam is not too dissimilar to Jameis Winston. That you don't have the same off-field red flags, obviously, but you had the whole issue with the laptop stuff at Florida. You have the whole issue with the money at Auburn. And then you have this guy who isn't physically what we've grown to expect as an NFL quarterback.
I have a friend who works with a lot of top draft prospects through the pre-combine rigmarole. You know, they're doing their mental testing and their physical testing, preparing for interviews, all that. This person worked very closely with both these guys. He said that they are similar in that they're both a little bit goofy, a little bit immature, a little bit silly. But he said the difference is Cam has a certain moodiness to him and a little bit of an aloofness at times that Jameis doesn't.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Okay.
So Jameis is more like locked in mentally is what you're saying? Or
And maybe just a little more of the team, where Cam sometimes
kinda
is a little
detached.
Above the or a little bit off to the side, and not all the time, and I think too much is probably made of that with Cam.
You mean
of
with the celebration putting the towel over his head type
but
stuff.
But it's just in being around those two and seeing them at the same area, same really identical points of their careers coming out of college and going through this process. This person thought that Jameis is even more wired to handle this than Cam.
Really?
That's interesting.
Yeah.
What did you take away from his press conference, Joel? Because he talked on Friday. Today's Friday. He talked on Friday afternoon, and it was you and I spoke really briefly after he finished by that Pete Carroll thing, but you could tell that he'd really been coached up.
He's well rehearsed. He wasn't going to say anything controversial, wasn't going to give you anything that you could use as a negative soundbite against him.
Right. And I mean, because he walked out, and he goes – It's rare, I think, when you have a prospect who, unless they are required to have something prepared, like a, you know, press conferences for coaches, they come out and they say, all right, here's the deal. Here's where we are. Now you can ask questions. James Winston came out and said, before we get going, I just want to point out that I've made a lot of mistakes. I regret these mistakes, and I'm going to prove that, you know, we can move past it. There weren't a whole lot of questions about any sexual allegations, and I know that he's been cleared
from it. That was smart on his part to be proactive about it, because it kind of sets the agenda. He gets it out of the way. He can control the message on his own, in his own way, in his own manner.
Well, and I think if those kind of questions had come up, I think he would have just gone back to sort of the talking point of, hey, I'm not going to get into specifics of certain allegations. I've made some sorts of mistakes. I've made some things I would do over again if given the opportunity, but I'm about to write a new chapter of my life and of my football career, and I'm going to show you through my words and my deeds as I work out and prepare and meet with these NFL teams and as I embark on my rookie season what I'm all about.
Oh, exactly. That's exactly how he would have handled it.
We in the media are pretty easily malleable when it comes to, like, we'll fall for, especially because it's not a guy you're used to dealing with. You know, you haven't been covering Jameis for 3 years or whatever, and he gets up there and he talks. He's kind of like, oh, he's got a delightful swagger to him.
Well, it was kind of like it was kind of like Super Bowl week, right? When Kraft gets off the plane, steps up to the mic, and is basically like, "Hey, Raj, don't make me spank you in public anymore. You guys don't know what you're talking about. This didn't really happen. I'm standing behind my guys. Drop the mic," and then. Like, Belichick got, like, three questions about it. Like, I don't think anybody even asked Brady.
Right.
You know what I mean? It was just kind of like, all right.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's right, wrong, or whatever. I mean,
no.
But that's sort of how these things go. The tenor can shift.
The ability of when you are proactive and you attack to take the air out of the sails of the press is fascinating to me, because it's like if James Winston would come in here and be like, how y'all doing? What do you have to ask me about?
He would have been bombarded with those questions.
Yeah.
And then he's going to have to do just what you said, Jason. That's how he's going to have to handle it. But since he went first and was on the offensive, it kind of disarmed everyone and maybe threw them off of where they thought they were going to go.
the militant regime was whoever was the MRI lady, the person, whoever kept asking, when was your MRI?
Who
gave you your MRI?
This is where I would insert like a code.
You have your MRI results in your back pocket? I want to see them now.
Yes, I ordered the code red. Yeah. You need me on that fence. Or that wall or whatever it is. But so, it's Jameis. I thought he did kill the press conference. He even made a joke. You know, people asked him about the fat picture that went viral. And he said, I look good and I know it. I mean, he was kind of crushing it. Does it matter to you if a guy like that can perform at a press conference when you're considering a possible first pick? I mean, you know, if you're a team.
A little bit, because he is going to be your face of your franchise. So
he said face of the franchise
a million
50
times.
You want him to be engaging and have a vibrant personality, but it's ultimately going to come down to what he can do on the field and whether he has any more missteps off the field.
Do you think anybody cares how he throws at the combine?
I mean, here's the reality. Like, to me, as long as he – no other bombshells come out about something he allegedly did in the past, and as long as he's a model citizen the next couple months, Tampa's taking him. So I think it's going to take something fairly significant to derail that process.
I've seen somebody, I don't want to name names, but you might have seen it, but I've seen somebody, RMP Prisco, as a bet with another media member about who will go first overall. Pete has Jameis Winston.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, if things go down the track, I think they're going to go down. And Tampa continues to get comfortable with this kid. And I know they're pretty comfortable. They've done a lot of work on him since before the Senior Bowl. They've already started their investigative process. If they come to the conclusion I think they're going to come to, which is good kid, solid kid, little goofy, little immature, did a few things, we're going to have an infrastructure here, he's going to be our leader, then he's going first overall.
By the way, we can find out if my boss listens to the podcast. But I mean, like, actually he is listening right now, I think. He has a set of earphones on. But
what was that gesture there?
I know that was rude.
So was that a one finger salute? Saying, I think it was a one finger salute.
If your boss went back like and did a full blown like police forensic investigation into your college career, would you still have your job? Because I might not.
I don't know if I would want anyone going back into things I did when I was 18 to 22.
That's what
I was
saying. Yeah, it's half
18
my
to
life
22
ago,
year
like,
olds.
Yeah. No,
have
but
questionable
you know
judgment.
But you know, I mean, it doesn't matter. It's not the same for
people
like one of us.
People do stupid things in college.
Yeah, and it is weird. This type of modern society where everything is on YouTube and Right. Jameis yells something in the quad, and it's on Twitter 30 seconds later.
Right. 15 years ago, nobody hears about it except the people on campus.
Exactly. And it doesn't even make the local news. It doesn't even make the, like, the student newspaper, because you wouldn't write that. You know, that's not.
Dude, like when I was in college, I remember like my senior year, I had to get something called like an email account, and I had a class where I had to file my report through a computer, and I was just like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, exactly.
There's you know what I mean? There's now you can pretty much write an encyclopedia on your phone and take all the pictures. You can film a movie on your phone. You know what I mean? So it's
right.
Like,
it's just totally
it's
changed.
So different. Like I remember, what the hell is email and how do I have to do this?
In fact, I mean, so insane that somebody created Snapchat. Somebody created a communication device that deletes your communications because, like, that's how weird enter the discussion between kids these days.
Oh, the culture it's just shifted in a crazy way. So, to hold these kids to a certain standard, I think some people go over the top with it and they're a little unrealistic. And I get that, well, they're about to have so much responsibility and all this, but that's the gig. They were good enough to get to this point.
But at the same
if you
time,
want to
for,
bring
for,
them in, there's
for any
a certain
of us,
risk involved.
No one was going to make a multi-million dollar investment in us at 22 like these guys.
That's
so
right.
The scrutiny is a little bit different. But at the same time, with the advent of social media, the TMZs of the world, cell phone cameras, that you can't do anything and have it fly under radar nowadays.
Right. Which, it makes it a lot tougher. We were talking about some free agents because, I mean, we could talk about more draft prospects. Mm-hmm. The Combine, it's Friday and it's wrapping up. It doesn't even feel like it's really gotten interesting from a draft perspective, right? I mean, nothing's happened. The free agency stuff and all these GMs and coaches talking is the really thing. We did a video that's on CBSSports.com, but for those people that aren't watching it, we talked about Ndamukong Suh, and we also talked about Dez Bryant and Demaryius Thomas. Suh first, Joel, when we talked about this, so I hate to be repetitive, but the guaranteed money he'll get is going to be bananas, right?
Yes, because if the type of deal he's trying to get is the J.J. Watt type of deal, who has basically $52 million in guarantees, deal averages basically $17 million a year. That's what he's trying to top. That's his target deal. The fact that he's got his own team wanting him back helps, and then he's going to have other suitors out there. If he can leverage the suitors against each other, he could get a contract which would boggle the minds of a lot of people.
Well, you also – and I think a lot of people in the public, when they kind of assess contracts or think about NFL contracts, probably don't factor this in. But J.J. Watt was negotiating – off a rookie contract 3 years in under the new CBA. First chance to make any real money would have been on the fifth-year option for like $7 million. They could franchise him after that. And Ndamukong Suh is coming in as the first overall pick under the old CBA, coming in at a cap number that's massive. That's what the guys don't go backwards, so that's what you're negotiating off of. So I'm with Joel. I think Suh will have 3 to 4 teams. Like, he's got a lot of teams. Everybody likes him. But, I mean, when you really get down to the nitty-gritty and you're talking numbers and you're going back and forth, I think I'll have 3 to 4.
When you're talking at that level, it becomes, am I window shopping or am I a serious buyer?
Right. And when we get down to buy time, and I think there'll be 3 or 4 teams that are legitimately putting,
really all he needs
putting
is two.
Contract. Right.
He only
and
needs
I think
two.
More
he just needs
two.
One bidder against the Lions, and he's fine.
And I think I'll have more than that.
Well,
he'll
easily have one bidder because, I mean, Oakland and Jacksonville are two bad teams with a ton of cap space and in a desperate need to get better on the defensive line. And, as mentioned, they've got to overpay because there's what percentage are we talking about to convince somebody to go to Oakland or convince somebody to go to Jacksonville?
Right.
Both nice places, but not exactly.
Well, they've got some
range.
Interesting dynamics, both of them. If you go to Florida, and this factors in for a high-end contract, no state tax.
Yeah.
California has the highest state income tax rate in the country. At that income level, we're talking like 13%. That was something that when I was an agent, when we had free agents that were going to get very lucrative contracts, we have the accountants we worked with factor that in just so we could do a comparison.
So they would basically run two scenarios on what you would look like after taxes.
If we're going here, what would it be after taxes? If we're going here, what would it be after taxes?
Do you get paid before tax or after tax as the agent?
Oh, you get paid off of the
off
salary.
The lump sum.
Off of the gross.
And now this is probably uninteresting for everybody, but I'm curious now. So when they pay the agent, does that come out of the tax? It comes out before you taxed?
Agent fees are deductible.
Okay, that's what I was asking.
But in real life, it feels like if hypothetically you had an agent who got 10% of your money and it's before taxes – it kind of feels more like 16%.
Right.
Because they're getting it off the full nut. If you understand what,
yeah,
you know
no,
what
no,
I mean?
No, no, exactly
they're not getting
saying.
It after
yeah.
taxes.
Yeah,
they're
yeah,
getting
yeah.
it off the lump.
Yeah, we're getting it off of the gross money, not the net money.
Yeah. But so what I'm saying is, like, if you go to Oakland,
hypothetically
all of a sudden you're getting this, yeah, hypothetically speaking, you're getting this this big chunk of change lobbed
you know
off.
Who I'm if you know who is listening to this podcast.
He's probably not.
But, probably not. Yeah. He's got much better things to do.
I would. Well, maybe. This is an interesting podcast. We were 74th on iTunes last
I'm not downplaying. I'm just thinking that.
I'm downplaying.
It's actually, okay. I hope he's up to doing something else.
So anyway, yeah. So this.
And the Raiders may be moving to L.A. I wonder if that would factor. I wonder if that's a part of their pitch to
wow.
some of these free agents. That hell, and oh, by the way, this hellhole we play in with sewage coming out of the bathroom and everything else. Like, we're going to
that
be.
That should be whether, a part of
whether
the
whether we're with Kroenke or we're with Spanos,
because
we're going to L.A.
One thing that we know about today's athlete is he wants to cross over into entertainment vehicles, and what better place to do it than being in L.A.? Major market. You could potentially get into movies if you're into music. You can go that route as well. So that would be a selling point.
And Sue, I don't think a lot of people know this because of his on-field incidents, all the stomping of the faces and the kicking in the nuts and all that stuff. But I think I'm allowed to say nuts.
That'd make him a perfect Raider.
That's exactly right. But he is, I mean, such an intelligent young man. And I hate to use the well-spoken line, but like he is a really, really smart dude.
Yes.
Especially off the field. And he turns into a psychopath once the game starts. And that's great. That's what you want. But
he definitely has some diverse interests and stuff, though. I mean,
exactly,
I think there's
yeah.
a lot of things about Hollywood,
well,
LA,
he's
whatever that was.
Got a pipeline to Warren Buffett, which is interesting in and
yeah.
of itself.
Yeah. How many college guys can say that? I mean, it's rare. Mm-hmm. So Dez Bryant Demaryius. Dez, as we talked about, is doing this weird thing on Twitter. We expect them to both get franchise tagged. You said that you think Dez ultimately plays out 2015 in the franchise tag, and that's how the Cowboys approach it, right?
Yeah, I think that they're going to be so far apart on what Jerry wants to pay him and what he's going to want, particularly if Demaryius ends up getting a long-term deal that's a strong deal. He's already rejected an offer which would make him the third highest paid wide receiver. That's going to be between Percy Harvin's $12.8 million and the top of the market at $16.2 million. Where it is, I don't know. Probably close to the lower end right now. But if he gets something $15 million and above, then Dez is going to want more than that. Dez, you put him on the open market today right now, he could be the highest paid wide receiver in football.
Does he top Calvin Johnson's
if he's
deal?
Free, you got a team, Oakland, has a ton of cap
yeah,
space,
yeah.
needs to spend money.
Jacksonville, too.
Jacksonville, either one of those could pay him a huge deal if he's on the open market, which isn't going to happen.
Cleveland right. could do it. I mean, there's
Cleveland
teams
desperately
that
needs
so,
receivers.
That's why you talked about trying to get a deal, put in a second – a clause that won't allow the Cowboys to franchise tag you the second time if you sign your first one. I mean, is there any thought as a player?
That's happened before.
Yeah.
It's something because
you
can do it.
Okay, yeah.
It's something. I think the last one was in 2008 with Albert Haynesworth at Tennessee. He had a conditional one where he had to play a certain percentage of the plays, which he did, and the defense had to rank a certain place. And he got it. Asante Samuels had one before. Lance Briggs had one. You can get them. They're hard. But if you go past that July 15th deadline for a long-term deal as a franchise player,
you get a lot of leverage.
And you're going to hold out.
Right.
I don't hold out like some of these guys have done the past few years, which is I'm making a protest because I don't like the whole franchise tag system, or I'm going to try to preserve or lower the risk of injury by missing the early part of camp. I would want my client, and I would be pushing for the prohibition clause where you couldn't put a franchise tag on me a second year. And my basic position to the team would be, when you're willing to give me that clause, we'll sign. You won't see me until then, whenever that is.
But do you eventually report to accrue the year?
Yeah, you have to report.
Like
yeah, you're
going
to report
yeah, yeah.
by the 10th week of the season
yeah,
if
yeah.
it goes to that point. But right. here's one interesting thing.
What about the Galloway thing? Are you familiar with that Galloway decision from like 2002?
Yeah, that's why he had to report.
But he had to do it by like week eight. If you basically it was like if you play half the season,
you have to get in six games to get the accrued season.
They can't toll your contract. Yeah,
right. You have to get. Yeah. But the thing is, there's a deadline under the CBA provisions for when you can sign as a franchise tag player. There's a drop dead date. I think you have to be, and if you're going to play that season, you have to come in by the 10th
week 10.
So but why wouldn't so if you let's say you can get that provision. If you're Dez Bryant, then do you play out that year and then give the Cowboys the finger and say we're going we're going to hit the market.
Well, here's what I do. If that, I go, you know what, Jerry? It's just business.
Right.
How does this work out for Demaryius? Is he, I mean, it seems to be a little bit less contentious for some reason. Maybe.
Well, because I think he has a sense that there's real money on the table and that it's going to take
some. Well,
they've
already put an offer on there.
It's going to take some shuffling around, but we're at least in the same ballpark. With Dez, the sense that I've had of this negotiation going back to October was it did get contentious. They were nowhere close. He went through agent changes. There was a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. He felt disrespected. He felt like at times they were trying to take advantage of him. So it's a different vibe.
Are they trying to play the, you know, Dez, we went out and got you. I mean, we are the ones who believed in you and drafted you. And
I've actually heard that from a couple of Dallas writers.
Yeah, really?
They're trying to play that tag, play that game with
them. I mean, that's
play
a,
the loyalty card with them,
that's
the buddy loyalty card. But the thing players have to realize is there's no such thing as loyalty in the NFL.
Right.
That's a strict homie don't play.
As soon
play
as
that
you don't make
situation.
Business sense for them anymore, you're gone.
Exactly. Yeah. That there, it's you've seen it all the time. If you had loyalty, Peyton Manning would still be right here in town.
Yeah, that's true. What about DeMarco Murray? How does he fit in, you know, with the idea that Dez is going to get the franchise tag. Does DeMarco Murray end up getting enough money from the Cowboys, or do they do something like let him walk and then go in the draft and get Todd Gurley in the first
round? Well, I think they want Adrian Peterson. But we'll see. A lot have to happen between now and April 15th.
So maybe they're playing a sort of game of chicken, expecting Peterson.
Yeah, well, I think they're going to let DeMarco Murray, and I talked to some people about this today who would kind of know. I think they'll let DeMarco Murray see what's out there for him. And if they can beat it, they will. And if they think it's ridiculous, then he walks. You know, but they're looking more at sort of money where Marshawn Lynch was prior to this, whatever this renegotiation. You know, they're looking more like in the five area.
And the Cowboys are.
Yeah, and he's looking more at like Shady McCoy up around nine, and that's a pretty big gulf. And I don't think it gets bridged unless somebody else comes and sets. No, it's 7-5. No, it's 8 or whatever. And then Jerry's got a decision to make.
Because I've talked to some cap guys I used to deal with when I was an agent, just to get their sense of this one. Because this is a very interesting scenario to me. Because you got a running back that they ran into the ground last year, 436 carries, including the playoffs. If you look at the history of how a back performs after that, it's not
falls
pretty.
Falls off a cliff.
Yeah, it falls off of a cliff. So when I've talked to these people, they've kind of pegged the number between the $7 and $9 million range. What he should get, the thing is they don't know what team will do it.
Who does it?
But they have – most of the cap people I've talked to aren't buying that Jerry is going to practice the fiscal responsibility he's preaching for a couple of reasons. One, he desperately wants to win a Super Bowl without Jimmy Johnson's fingerprints over it. Two, he's got a short window with Romo as quarterback. He turns 35 in April, and he's had back surgeries over the past 2 years. So they fully expect Jerry to do what he's always done, kick the can down the road, restructure contracts, pick up cap room, and they're taking the I'll believe it when I see it approach
right.
when he tightens the purse strings.
Well, I still think he may do it, but it's going to take him matching somebody else's offer to go. I don't think he bids against himself in the next 2 weeks.
Right, I don't think he does either.
And gives this guy 7 or 8 a year. Just to keep him off the
market.
Oh,
I agree with you on that. I just think
in the end, though, he'll put two pennies on the table more than whatever else is out
there.
Yeah,
he'll do what he'll have to do.
Yeah.
Which is crazy because I like DeMarco Murray and think he's a great runner and think he's a unique talent who fits – or a semi-unique talent who fits what the Cowboys want to do.
This was the first year he was healthy, though.
Exactly.
And they ran him into the ground.
From a fully objective business perspective, there is no other decision but to let him leave.
Oh, I wouldn't pay a running back.
Exactly.
I would not pay a running back in today's game. I would let him go.
The Panthers, they paid two. And look where Marty Ernie is.
That made no sense whatsoever. I would let DeMarco walk, draft his replacement somewhere because you can find a running back to come out of nowhere. Look at Justin Forsett. Guy played on his league minimum practically this year and it led the
NFL
salary
backs, benefit contract.
Yeah, led all running backs in yards per carry.
What's he getting in the market? Not much, right?
Actually,
I go back to last year. These guys had trouble getting 3-5 a year.
Right.
You know what I mean? The Gerharts and all these guys, they were like trying to push for three. I think it's probably the same for him. Maybe he gets 2 years, $6 million with 4 guaranteed. If they really want to be,
that would be the
be
most
nice
money
to,
he's ever made in his career.
Yeah, and he'd be happy with it. But he certainly deserves more from a what did you do last year?
Right.
But that's not how the NFL.
Well,
works.
Speaking of backs, there's another interesting one to me, which is Frank Gore.
Yeah.
Because San Francisco's negotiating with him right now.
I hear
for him to return.
Drew's asking for 4
years.
4
makes sense for this reason that he's 31. Right now the oldest paid. Older running back, and not for long, most likely, Steven Jackson. That deal averages $4 million a year.
Yeah.
So it makes sense to pay him at that level, but you're going to know that you're getting diminishing returns.
Right. It's going to mean whatever they call it, 2-year deal, 3-year deal. You know, it's going to be 1 year, $4 million, and then
if they want to keep him after that,
they can, but there won't be any commitment financially beyond
this
year.
There are some teams, though, because I did the Adrian Peterson piece basically just ripping off whatever you said and then plugging it into my words. Thank you for that, by the way.
No problem.
But we're talking about spots, landing spots for Peterson. I mean, all these teams, the Colts, the Chargers, the Vikings, if they lose Peterson, are going to end up, you know, these are teams that are going to need to find a running back, right? I mean,
what about the New York Jets? Like, let's say they're unable to get Revis and some of these guys who they'd have on their ultimate wish list, and it's April and they're still sitting, he's got 50 plus million in cap space now.
They've got to spend money.
And that's before they cut Harvin. So, and they got to spend money, and whoever they have at quarterback is not going to be a game changer.
So they're going to need to run the football.
They're going to need to run the football. Like, does that make sense for them?
Yes, it does. It makes a ton of sense just because right now.
Are you talking about AP or Gore?
AP.
AP.
Oh, yeah, no, AP, they were on the list.
The Jets.
Yeah, because right now they're at 85% spending over the past 2 years, over the 4-year period, 2013 through 16. You've got to spend 89% of the cap in cash. They're behind. They need to spend money. They have basically $50 million in cap room. If anyone's going to overpay a running back for how they would have to use them, that's the team.
The Jets are so – like 2 years ago the Jets were in cap hell and we're never getting out of it. And now they're like, oh,
it takes a couple years.
No, but it was very quickly.
John Idzik, who I like a lot, was extremely frugal to the point where
it got him
fired. I don't understand how you don't address cornerback.
Yeah.
Well,
Woody Johnson came out at the –
But I think also Woody didn't want to spend for a period of time. That's what attracted him. I mean, we could put it on Idzik.
Yeah.
And certainly they made some mistakes, but clearly Woody wanted a guy – who we just gave Santonio Holmes crazy
money.
Yeah,
going to go wild.
We gave David Harris crazy money. We gave Mark Sanchez crazy money. We're paying guys too late in their career or paying guys who don't deserve it, and I got to get my house in order. So I think that was a big part of John Idzik's appeal. But to make the kind of bogus offers they made to Muhammad Wilkerson to try to keep him under the old regime, and we'll see where that one goes.
See, that one's going to cost them money because – there's no excuse why they didn't extend him. You could have potentially gotten him.
They should have done it a year ago.
In the Calais Campbell, $30 million guaranteed, $11 million per year neighborhood.
And it's going to cost
them. That's out the window nowadays.
No, absolutely it's out the window. So, you know, they're going to have to spend some money. I know they'd like to get Revis. I don't think they're going to do it. But now they've realized that they went down that road. It didn't work. It's just like with these coaches, right? You go from hiring the coach who's going to tear your head off to the player's coach, right? You go the opposite way. So he went this way. They didn't win any games. The fans turned against them. Obviously, it was – you know, the flying banners and stuff over practices. So now what's he got to do? He's got to spend his way out of it a little bit.
No, exactly.
You date the crazy blonde, and you break up with the crazy blonde. You're like, yeah, I need to reel this back in. And
you go with the librarian, who you come to find out
so
is crazier
analogy.
Than the crazy.
Yeah,
but then you find out the librarian is crazier than the crazy
blonde.
It's
the ex-girlfriend factor. When they go and hire a coach, it's like, holy crap.
Yeah, and it's the same thing with their front office approach right now.
Like Todd Bowles is the bizarro world Rex Ryan.
Well, the one thing that didn't make sense to me in New York is, and that's why I had a hard time attracting anyone a couple years ago, was you're stuck with Rex. Rex, fine coach, but human nature is you want to hire your own guy.
Yeah.
And that relationship didn't work. Idzik and Rex, it was too dysfunctional. When Rex is talking about, I thought about going behind Idzik's back to try to get Revis.
He didn't
what
think about
that?
It. He tried it.
Like,
he was
I'm
trying.
Like, I'm like,
he
what
was
is that?
Talking to people close to Revis. Like, I think if you slow play this enough, I can get Woody to do it without Idzik knowing.
I'm like, what is that? That's no way to run an organization.
That's dysfunctional.
Yeah.
Like, that's the definition of dysfunction. All right. So I'm trying to think if there's anything else notable from this week at the Combine that pops out to me.
They're breaking down the sports science booth over there.
That is very notable. Are you going to run a 40?
Not for any public consumption.
How fast do you think you could run the 40 in? We'll get you out on this.
I have no idea.
How fast do you think you could run a 40?
I played small college basketball at Emory, and we did time ourselves in the 40, way long time ago when I was in college, and I ran in the high 4.5s back then.
That's good.
Have no idea what I could run now.
This is all just a big setup for me bragging about my 40 time.
I ran a
4.98. I could not believe that.
But recently?
Within the past 6 months.
Was that the thing you guys did on the Thursday night?
Yeah. No, there was a lot of wind at my back.
Who cares?
Was it downhill?
It was on an elevator.
The person timing me was drunk, so.
Yeah. It was official.
Quick trigger thing.
It was at a high school in Florida.
And who was the timer?
The track coach.
The track? Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it was legit. And I thought I was worried I wasn't going to run very fast. And the worst part about the whole thing was when we went, it was in November. And so I had a mustache. So I had a mustache, and I show up in these short, like, gym shorts.
So you're Aaron Rodgers.
I look like I pull up, but it's a private high school. I pull up to security, and the guy looks at me and goes, "No, you were not coming into this high school with small children walking." Anyway, that's my creepy November 40 time story. Hey, thanks for joining us, guys. That was fun.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.